This is Black Agenda Radio, a weekly hour of African-American political thought and action.
Welcome to the radio magazine that brings you news, commentary, and analysis from a Black Left perspective. I'm Glenn Ford. This week, we're focusing the entire program on the Jackson Rising New Economies Conference, where hundreds of activists and organizers descended on Jackson, Mississippi, to explore alternatives to the cutthroat capitalism that prevails in the U.S. The organizers had hoped the event would be hosted by Chokwe Lumumba, the revolutionary black nationalist who was elected mayor of mostly black Jackson in June of last year. However, Lumumba died suddenly this past February, and his son, Chokwe Antar Lumumba, was defeated in a special election to fill his father's seat in April. Despite the loss, the Jackson Rising Conference went on as scheduled, organized by activists of the Malcolm X grassroots movement, the organization co-founded by Chokwe Lumumba. Dozens of Malcolm X grassroots movement cadre have moved to Jackson. Black Agenda Report Managing Editor Bruce Dixon was on hand for all 3 days of the Jackson Rising Conference. The late mayor, Lumumba, envisioned the conference as a way to uplift the economies of not just Jackson, the capital city, but also of a string of mostly black connected counties in the state of Mississippi. Some see cooperatives as key to developing black economies throughout the South and beyond. Ed Whitfield of the Fund for Democratic Communities is a veteran of cooperative economic projects.
I grew up in a period of time when stuff going on here in Mississippi was affecting the nation and the world because a cry came out of one of the communities here in Mississippi. Not out of an individual, but out of the community and out of the struggle. It was a cry for black power. And when I heard it, it just seemed sensible. It just seemed perfectly logical. It just seemed to make sense that people should control and have power over the things that affected their lives. I couldn't understand how anybody decided that that was some hateful notion that was going to undermine the civil rights struggle and we should be careful of how. It just made sense to me. Another thing that made sense to me was the question of fighting for a relevant education. That's what I spent my early years in the Black Power movement being involved with and doing. And relevancy, again, had to do with people learning what they needed to know to be able to do what they needed to do for themselves. And so in March of 1969, a great American philosopher put out a two-sided single where he said, "I don't want nobody to give me nothing. Just open up the door and I'll get it myself." That's our work. That is still our work.
Yes.
The door needs to be open, and we're going to get it ourselves. Yeah. Now, that's a recognition of two things. One is a door somewhere, and it's often closed. Somebody's got a key, but there's some stuff on the other side of the door, that if the door is open and we have the opportunity, we ourselves have to go get what we need. So there's this vision, there's this picture in our minds of what it is that we really want to be able to do for ourselves, for our people, for our community. It's a vision where we have to be able to see something that is not there yet. And once you can see this thing that isn't there yet, you can do the work to make sure that it gets there. And it's the vision about having equitable access to opportunities to be fully productive members of a community, including the opportunity to start businesses that meet community needs. It's a vision where we're able to produce for the needs of our community and be fairly rewarded for our effort in producing those things. It's a vision where we don't have to beg somebody rich and powerful to give us a job. It's a vision where we're able to use our labor to provide enough for our loved ones and ourselves, as well as being able to provide for the very young, the old, the infirm, and those people who are caretakers of the community and aren't out producing something else. Producing some love and taking care of people. It's a vision where we enjoy the dignity that comes from being productive and needed parts of the society. to vision where we're free to be independent political thinkers and actors, unfettered by the fear of displeasing other people on whom we might otherwise depend. It's a vision where we're able to be role models and teachers to the young who will follow in our footsteps. That's the picture. You have to be able to see that to get there. What it's going to take to get there is a lot of creativity. This isn't anything simple. This isn't something where you can take a cup of biscuit magic and add water to it and think you can roll out the morning biscuit. This is where we have to be creative and develop innovative ways to meet the needs of the community in sustainable, seriously well-structured kind of business things. But in addition to the entrepreneurship and that creativity goes into that, we have to make sure that we do it on the basis of democracy, not on the basis of individual elevation. It's a lot of hard work to build a business, and the reason some individuals will do it is because there's this huge reward on the other end of this effort. There's people talking about putting in 40, 50, 60 hours a week for little or nothing sometimes in order to create a business, but that's because they think they can get this huge reward, cash out, and go off and lay somewhere on a beach. We have to build businesses that are democratic in a way so hopefully the many hands will make some of the work lighter, but it's still going to be an incredible challenge to do it because it is a democratic effort to be an entrepreneur, and we have to be inclusive. We have to make sure, and I'm not talking about being diverse. I've never understood some of the arguments people made for diversity. So if you don't have enough folks, you start running out and grabbing folks. You know, if I'm in an all-black town, to be inclusive is to let all the black people in that town come and be involved in it. And if somebody else moving in a town who's not black, to be inclusive is to allow them to be involved in it. But it doesn't mean I have to run out and try to find some people who don't live there so I can be diverse. So I want y'all to bear with me in recognizing that distinction. I've seen school systems do crazy stuff. So we gotta have some diversity. Gotta, what do you mean, black kids can't learn about them? What would that even mean? Anyhow, so we're talking about inclusive, democratic entrepreneurship. That's what this cooperative work is about. And in order to do that, we need to build worker cooperatives that are owned and governed by the workers in the business. We need to build community-based consumer cooperatives that are owned and governed by the community members who need the goods and services and who also have an interest in creating good jobs and building community. We need to build financial cooperatives which are owned and governed by the depositors and which can play a role in financing the development of the community and its enterprises. We need to help build producer cooperatives, as this gentleman here is expert in talking about, where small businesses, small farmers come together and expand their buying power, expand their marketing power, so that they can again do things to elevate the community. So with a vision, with goals and strategies to reach that vision, we have to remember what a cooperative is. And it's such a, the definition of a cooperative is such a profound statement because it says it is an autonomous association of people united voluntarily to meet their common economic, social, and cultural needs and aspirations through a jointly owned and democratically controlled enterprise. But the first sentence of that it is an autonomous association of people. That's the challenge. Building an autonomous organization of people. And once you can build an organization of people that are capable of working together democratically, you got 95% of the hard part of the work out of the way. But in addition to that, this part of this definition, the values, based on values of self-help, self-responsibility, democracy, equality, equity, solidarity, and in the tradition of the founders, believe in the ethical values of honesty, openness, social responsibility, and caring for others. Isn't that about what our whole justice movement stands for and represents? And it is encapsulated in this work we're doing around these economic things. But once we have the vision, an association of people who want to implement that vision, we also need to have resources. We need to open that door. So we're going to have to build all kinds of different kinds of fights. Part of opening that door is reaching into our own pockets, which we did, in my understanding, again, from the announcement made at lunch, is in about 10 minutes as people are filing out of here, we raised $1,900. Oh, I'm sorry. It's more than that. Over $2,000 in a few minutes in this room. So we begin with that. Because that's how people take us seriously. Nobody takes you seriously if you're just walking around talking, give me something, give me something, give me something. But when you start saying, hey, look, this is serious to me. This is something I value. How I'm going to show you I value is I reach in my pocket. And that is a day shelter in the city of Greensboro, North Carolina, to work with people who are experiencing homelessness, who in the course of their grassroots fundraising were going out and talking about, and they were often asking wealthy people and stuff to give money. And the people who didn't have a home, wouldn't have a place to shower except when they come there, reach in their pocket and say, I got a few dollars I want to put into this too, because this is the place I want to be involved with. That's the kind of seriousness. That's how people get to take you seriously. So don't ever tell me you're working in a community where nobody has any money. Right? Because we will take our beer money, our cigarette money, our nail money, our do money. You got to get the do. We'll take some part of that money and put it together and pool it together so that we have skin in the game and people take us seriously as we continue to knock on that door and say, open this door, because we have also produced several hundred years of surplus that has been swirled away somebody by somebody else, and who is being, we want access to that. That's what we want access to. So a lot of people at different points talk about reparation, and some folks think about a check that they want to get in the mail, and it's like, oh, If I was a corrupt white politician, what I would have done several years ago is I would have sent all y'all a check. You know why? Because it would be spent by now. And all of that money would be right back where it is now, which is in the hands of the people who concentrate wealth. We're going to have to build something different, but I do want that wealth in the form of a development institution, a development bank that makes zero or very low interest loans available to communities that are looking to elevate themselves, where when people put some of their own skin in the game, they go out and say, hey, look, we want some additional resources now, because quite frankly, we want to buy that automated machine so we can compete with Nissan on those cars. We got this slick soul car we're going to make. We're going to make the Mississippi soul car. And we want it to be at least as fancy as some of those other things, okay? So I just wanted to put those pieces out there. Vision, an organization of people, and access to resources. But we have to put skin in the game. And James Brown said it. I mean, you know, you can't argue with a philosopher who goes that deep. I don't want nobody to give me nothing. Just open up the door. I'll get it myself.
Ed Whitfield of the Fund for Democratic Communities. Melba Smith of the Coalition for a Prosperous Mississippi addressed the same workshop at the Jackson Rising Conference. She's from nearby Rankin County.
I wanted to talk about an issue today that is going to help us move forward in this cooperative movement, and that is the policy issue. The Coalition for a Prosperous Mississippi's mission is empowering Mississippians to create assets and to build wealth through policy change. And we have a policy within our state that does not allow for the incorporation of cooperatives in any other sector within the state except agriculture. And I know some of you may have heard me talk about that over the last 2 days. And so our issue, we've been fighting this issue for the last 4 years. To expand this current law to allow cooperatives to be incorporated in other sectors of the state. We know that agriculture is what the state is, Mississippi is known for. And we can see the research, if you look at agriculture cooperatives or small farmers, how they have progressed and participated in this economy. You'll see small farm cooperatives that were incorporated in this state, how they have banded together and have moved forward in impacting the markets because they're working collectively together. They've also been able to provide transportation for each other. They've also been able to add value to their product by working together. And they've also been able to grow fresh fruits and vegetables within their own local community. So they've had an impact on the state. And our question is, why is it that we are not allowed to incorporate other cooperatives in other sectors of the state of Mississippi? People who want to do that have to go outside the state and incorporate and then apply for a license to do business within this state. Now, what have we done in this since we've been talking about this for 4 years? We've been working on this for 4 years. First of all, we've been building a base of support within the community, educating people on what cooperatives are, how cooperatives benefit, and how cooperatives build communities as well as families, and how cooperatives build this state and support this state economically. So we have been looking at other stakeholders, we've been looking at other people that can support the issue, and we've been looking at our legislators too. Who are our champions there that we can educate on what cooperatives are? And who will catch hold to this vision and help us move it forward too? This hardship that places on people in low wealth people, especially those who have to go outside the state to get legal assistance in order to incorporate and then to come back within the state. And some people will say, okay, well, you can just form an LLC. But if we believe in the tenets of cooperatives and what cooperatives provide in communities and how they build communities and do all these things that the panel has talked about today, why would you want to take a less? Why would you not want to stand for cooperatives if you believe in them? So we're pushing this very hard. So what I want to talk about in addition to what I've just said is going forward. What do we need in order to get this policy adopted into law? How can we change this policy, expand it to include the incorporation of other types of cooperatives in other sectors within this community? We're going to have to continue to build a base of support. We're going to have to educate our people, those that will benefit from the use of cooperatives in their community, how cooperatives build communities, how cooperatives empower people to take control of their lives and go forward with it. Making decisions. We've talked about this on this panel, and we've talked about this throughout this conference. People taking control of their lives. What do they want to do? How are they involved in the whole process? So that's one thing, is educating the constituency. We call that building a base. Then it's also educating our legislators. Now, we found out in walking the halls of the Capitol that a lot of them didn't even know what cooperatives were. And when you say, okay, where do you get your utilities? Do you get your utilities from EPA, Rural Electric Association, REA? Oh, yes, I didn't know that was a cooperative. Do you buy land on Lake Butter? Oh, yes, I didn't realize. Is that a cooperative? Do you buy Florida Natural Orange Juice? Yes, that's a cooperative. But most of all, do you get your insurance from Farm Bureau? Yes, that's a cooperative. But we're going to have to build relationships not just with the base, but those people who have the power to change the situation in our state. Now, we're not the only state with this situation. It's my understanding that it's through pretty much throughout the Southeast, Georgia, Alabama, and other states too. So I think if Mississippi is going forward, then we can be the lighthouse for other states to change as well. But another thing I think that we want to do too is to make sure that our message is clear and accurate when we speak. How do cooperatives build jobs in the state of Mississippi? How do they build the economy? How do they bring people out of poverty into participating in the economy within the state?
Melba Smith of the Coalition for a Prosperous Mississippi. Jim Evans is a Mississippi state representative and works with the AFL-CIO. He's a veteran of the wars against the black and poor in Mississippi.
I've been fighting here for a long time. I started the Jackson chapter of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. Been fighting this demon all my life. My father rode shotgun for Meg Evers. And I mean shotgun. Where he had the 45 in his pocket and a double barrel 12 gauge on his hip. And all the other instruments they had was a bucksaw in the trunk of the car so they could saw the logs off. He had to hold them off while they were sawing the logs so he could get through the blood, the roadblocks. And then, anybody here from Atlanta? Anybody? I see some hands roll up. If I said the word leader, you know what I'm talking about. The great people's agenda leader, Reverend James Owen. We travel these back roads together. I said, Reverend Owen looked death in the face and death blinked.
Yes. Yes.
I used to ask my daddy when I would go to him, he'd stop and buy some Prince Albert in a local store. He always rolled his own cigarettes. And he'd roll them, and one day he would always say, don't close the door. When he got out of the car, leave the driver's door open. One day I saw him run out of there. I heard that 45 talking, bow, bow. And he hollered, get down, get down. And he got down and backed out of there and fired a few more shots at the door. And we got a few miles away, and I composed myself. I said, Dad, I said, when you do that, you ever hit anybody? He said, son, I've never gone back to check. I learned this lesson a long ways and a hard way. When I was 5 years old, I used to watch my mama take a brand new overcoat for my dad and cut the pockets out, all the way out, and then sew them back to the lining of the coat. And then she would take a ruler and measure the bottom of that coat and measure that shotgun barrel. So when he stuck that shotgun down through that brand new overcoat, his thumb wouldn't get caught on the trigger when he came out. And then so the barrel would rest on that heavy cloth, and she'd be crying all while she was doing this. And I was 5 years old. I said, Mama, he said, this your daddy's fighting clothes. And I said, well, what are they fighting for? She said, liberty and justice for all.
Yes.
And then I've been on that battlefield ever since, and I was 5 years old, and I'm soon to be 65. But I want you to understand this. Because this conference went on, Jackson will rise. I said, because this conference went on, Jackson will rise. And because this conference went on, the spirit that gathered here will make sure that Mississippi rises and that Jackson is transformed. Jackson cannot rise until it's transformed. And it can't be transformed without the made-up people to make sure the confirmation happens. I'm asking you this morning, I wish Yerubu Hill was here. The only question I didn't know. Anybody here tell me what December 10th is? Oh, yeah. Absolutely Human Rights Day. International Human Rights Day. And this country has never ratified the human rights. Never ratified it. I had hoped that before Obama left, we'd get that done. He got so many problems. I don't want him stirring up them demons with that right now until we get immigration and other things done, but we should make sure that gets done. So I want to challenge you like Chuck Way would do. You know, I brought some union people from South Africa and Japan in to see Mayor Lumumba, and they thought they was going to get an introduction to the mayor, and they're going to tell him about it. Well, he challenged them. He said, we got this great civil rights memorial coming back on the 23rd of June, and if y'all want to help these folks, why don't you in Japan and Britain and everywhere you got a Nissan plant, why don't y'all come down there and join us in a march for justice for the Nissan workers in Canton? I'll lead that march. Well, by the time those organizers picked themselves up off the floor and recomposed themselves, they said, what kind of man is this? And then they all agreed to it, and UAW is still in the process of sponsoring that World March for Justice for the Workers at Nissan. And I thought about December 10th, International Human Rights Day. We celebrated it twice, two or three times, but I think in Mississippi, once at the UAW, at the CWA Hall, and once somewhere else. And it was so great. The president of the AFT and President Larry Korn of the CWA, they all came down to it, and we have done it again. I really don't know why, so I'm begging all y'all, if y'all not doing nothing December 10th, we're going to do something. I'm going to get with these folks here and see what we're going to do, but we're going to do something. And I'd like to invite all of y'all back. But I want to say this. We got some work to do. There's enough power and spirit in this room to get it done. You got allies all over the globe. And if we don't organize, see, I never will forget what Joe Lowry said as I get ready to close. What Joe Lowry said when they rolled him in the wheelchair after all this big 50-year commemoration up at the Washington Monument of I Have a Dream, Joe Lowry said, now that we celebrated and commemorated, let's go home and organize. Now that we have celebrated and commemorated, let's go home and organize, because these folks ain't going to change nothing unless we organize and build a majority. They don't know what's right, and neither do they care.
Black Agenda Report's Bruce Dixon interviewed scores of participants in the Jackson Rising Conference. Iya Falola, a Malcolm X grassroots movement activist from Jackson, talked with Dixon about the meaning of a solidarity economy.
I see the opportunity for us to begin to awaken and understand the power and the potential that we have within. I see an opportunity for us to overcome some of the restraints that have been placed upon us in the past by other people's standards and dictates. I see for us beginning to come together and understanding how we collectively can pull our resources together to serve as a support to each other and to our community that perhaps exists outside of the economic model that is currently in place today.
Speaking of economic models, as African Americans, we hear a lot about success stories, but there are always individual success stories, the Oprah Winfreys, the Junior Bridgemans, the Magic Johnsons of the world. What does the solidarity economy and the cooperative ethos have to say to us black folks about real models of economic uplift?
The real model of economic uplift is taking the I out of the concept and understanding that until we come together collectively and that we all are able to benefit by our efforts unitedly, that there is no solidarity in economy. It's a capitalist, be whatever color it is, it's still capitalistic. So my message to those who are interested in solidarity economy is starting to think universally as opposed to individually, starting to think collectively.
The Malcolm X grassroots movement activists got technical, material, and moral support from many veterans of cooperative economics. Bruce Dixon spoke with John Zippert of the Federation of Southern Cooperatives, which has been active in the region for many decades.
I think we've had a great conference here for the last 3 days. Lots of people, lots of interest, lots of good ideas, some that people are doing and some that they want to do. So the Federation of Southern Cooperatives has been involved in the cooperative movement from its beginnings 47 years ago. So we're always glad to see new interest and new people and ready to help provide technical assistance and support for them as they go forward to organize new cooperatives.
What does the cooperative movement have to offer to us in terms of success stories?
Well, I think to begin with, a cooperative is a collective effort and a community effort and an effort by a group of people working together and sharing the benefits of the progress that they make in an equitable and democratic way. And that's why cooperatives do offer an economic alternative, even for the poorest people and for African Americans from a cultural and historical standpoint. It offers a way for people to embrace values of working together with others to enhance the total community. So individuals will move up, but they'll also move up by lifting others in their community and working with others in their community. And the benefits will be distributed in an equitable way, so people will rise together. And I think that's why the conference is called Jackson Rising, in part why the conference is called Jackson Rising. So cooperatives offer a really different approach and different way of looking at economic development in a social change context that really will be beneficial to African American people.
That was John Zippert of the Federation of Southern Cooperatives. Salima Muhammad works with Praxis, which also helped get the Jackson Rising Conference off the ground.
I do see a lot of organizers, okay, people that call themselves organizers that could take a lead on a lot of different things and gathering together, trying to figure out speaking truth to power, if they can organize themselves as one to try to get some of these things done that they really want to get done, moving forward, using Mississippi as a center, as a core, because of the need that's so strong down here.
As African Americans, we get fed a steady diet of success stories, good news stories, people like Oprah and Magic Johnson and Junior Bridgman. And we've been told for a long, long time that the way to lift the masses of our people up is to make a few more black millionaires. What does the cooperative model have to offer us that that other model does not?
I don't think that that's a clear statement. I don't think that if you're looking to become a millionaire of a cooperative, it's not right, but a better way of living. I think what people are really looking for is to live the best they can, comfortably, and live in a society that is equal. You know, their focus is good health, good living, good food, all the things that are not good. They think that they can get it through cooperative and ownership of things that they need. So I think that that's what people are looking for in a co-op. If we could own it, we can determine how it's used. And I think that that's where I see people directing their energy towards getting.
The world's most famous cooperative venture is Mondragon, a federation of cooperatives owned by 80,000 workers and based in the Basque region of Spain. Mondragon has been in business for almost 60 years and operates plants in 39 countries. Michael Peck of Mondragon USA ran a workshop at the Jackson Rising Conference. He said that if they're not careful, cooperative worker enterprises can wind up behaving much like cutthroat capitalists.
We're in 39 countries. In 2013, we got the Financial Times Boldness in Business Award. It's the highest award the Financial Times gives out. And I want to tell you why we got it. We have made a lot of mistakes in our 60-year history. So many mistakes that there's a lot of PhDs out there that owe their thesis to our mistakes. We have an expression in Mondragon that we take very seriously, which is, this is not paradise and we are not angels. Because it's not. Unfortunately, compared to the predatory capitalist economy, it sometimes seems like it's paradise compared to the abuses that we all experience in our daily lives. But we've made lots of mistakes. And so one of the big mistakes we made was an investment, a financial investment in Argentina in a factory in the early 1990s. And the currency was devalued, and we lost our shirt. And in Mondragon, when something bad happens, what I can guarantee you is that there's years of committees talking about it. I mean, it just never goes away. The lessons are always there. Why? Because it's everybody's money, everybody has a vote and a voice, and everybody takes it personally. So the big question is, you know, why did we lose those millions of euros in Argentina? And the conclusion that we came up with was that we went into there as a big industrial group. We're now the seventh largest industrial group in Spain. And we're the largest industrial group in the Basque region. We're worth about 4.2% of the Basque GNP. We went into that region, into that investment, with as a financial investor, but we didn't take our values with us. In other words, we weren't a values investor. We were a financial investor. And we realized that as big as we might be, we're still susceptible to all the ups and downs, business cycles, market cycles that happens to every other industry and every other industrial group. It's what happens after and during those cycles that differentiates us. For example, what we did when Fagor ran the end of its growth cycle, what did we do? We focused our money on making sure all those workers found jobs. We didn't give them pink slips. We didn't throw them into the street. We didn't say, you're on your own. There was no golden parachute. The equipment wasn't bundled off and sold to China. A lot of things that all of us have seen happen in the United States time after time after time again didn't happen. We put our money where our values mouth is. And so we had a general assembly in Mondragon where everybody gets to vote on all the hard issues. There's a lot of hard issues. This is a tough world to be economically successful in for anybody. And we decided that we would never again make another international investment without taking our values with us. And we came to that conclusion about 10 to 12 years later in the 2005 Congress, because, you know, when everybody has an opinion and there's 80-something thousand of you, it takes a while to form cohesion. But we got there, and now what we're trying to do is, you know, we have 19 production plants in China. We're in Vietnam, we're in Poland, we're in Morocco, we're in France, we're all over the place. And now we're going to these different groups and asking them to vote. So we're now offering our different groups overseas and overseas plants the opportunities to vote to become cooperative members. And I must tell you that every time we bring it up in China, the Chinese say no. They don't want to be, because the word cooperative has a cultural connotation there that's not positive. In some other places, people have problems with it. They like the job part, but they don't like the ownership part. And that, you know, that's interesting for us, because here in America, we face the same problem. We have an economy that was built on a certain group of people who were told to punch the clock. Another certain group of people were told that in their DNA and their birth certificate came stock options. And somehow, we've got to figure out how to combine those two together to make a new American economy, which is why you're all here and it's why we're here.
Michael Peck of Mondragon, USA. Locally, the Mississippi Project is known as Cooperation Jackson. Adolfo Minka of the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement told Bruce Dixon what the project is all about.
Cooperation Jackson is an entity that's being established here in the city of Jackson to help develop cooperative enterprises here in the city. And it's made up of four different arms. It's going to have four arms to it. The first one is going to be a school where we can educate people on what cooperatives are and why it's important for, at this particular time, for cooperatives to be developed here in the city of Jackson. Another arm of Cooperation Jackson is going to be a cooperative incubator. And when we say cooperative incubator, we mean an entity or an institution that helps develop the cooperatives, helps people get funding that they need to develop cooperatives and any other kind of support that people need. Thirdly, we're also going to develop a federation of cooperatives under the banner of Cooperation Jackson. And a federation of cooperatives is basically a network of cooperatives, which will be made up of all cooperative enterprises that are founded here in the city. Its focus is going to be in ensuring that people practice the principles in developing the cooperative democratic principles, and in order to wield power here in the city, banding together to wield power and influence here in the city as well. And lastly, you're going to have a financial institution, which basically is going to be here to help fund cooperatives here in the city and create an economic base for that particular goal and objective.
Like a bank or a credit union?
Yeah, like a bank or a credit union. Exactly.
What sorts of cooperatives are we talking about here? There are cooperatives which do exist, like Land O'Lakes Butter and such, which are not run by the workers working in them. So what kinds of cooperatives is Cooperation Jackson looking at? And will those cooperatives be run by the people who actually do the work?
Yeah, we're talking about worker cooperatives when we talk about developing cooperatives here in the city of Jackson.
You mean worker-managed cooperatives?
Yeah. When we say cooperatives, we basically mean an entity that focuses on developing the people, placing the means of production in the hands of the people, and focus more on creating livable wages and benefits for the people who work in those businesses, as opposed to one owner who is interested in only developing his own pockets, optimizing his own wealth. So that's the type of thing that we're talking about. We talk about developing cooperatives. It's not a capitalist venture. It's not an exploitative or oppressive venture. This is something where the people will be a central focus. The people will be the focal point in developing cooperatives and establishing economic justice for the people here in Jackson that have been left out historically of the economic scene here in the city.
But every time we hear about black economic development, the only thing we hear about is what to do to create a few more black millionaires. Supposedly, creating more black millionaires is going to lift us all up. That's the model that Maynard Jackson and all the black mayors have placed in use. Is Cooperation Jackson going to create any brand new black millionaires?
No, that's not our interest. We are interested in empowering the people to control the means of production and to forge their own economic destiny here in the city. And as you point out, those models of creating black millionaires, they have failed for the masses of the people. If you look in the city of Jackson, you have a disproportionate amount of wealth between those who have the wealth and those who do not have the wealth. They're not at the table. So we're not interested in continuing this type of relationship. We're interested in having a situation where people can make livable wages and still have time and energy to do the things that are necessary to take care of their families, to be involved in their communities, and this type of thing. And as far as the black capitalist class is concerned, they're only interested in fattening their own pockets. They are just as exploitative and degrading as some of the white supremacist capitalist system that we've seen played out in this society. So we're not for that. We're not for that.
Most of the people that the Malcolm X grassroots movement wants to organize in Jackson have no land and little money. Vaughn Anderson, Makia Kambui, and Akil Bakari talked with Bruce Dixon about how the Cooperation Jackson Project will benefit working people.
Jackson, for instance, there's a tremendous amount of crafts talent. What I mean by that, plumbers, electricians, roofers, bricklayers,
painters.
Now, individually, a lot of those people don't have the institutional capacity to deal with large contracts as far as bonding and insurance requirements and those type of things. Putting a cooperative together where you have all this diverse skill set in one place as an entity and then providing technical assistance for that entity to be able to secure the proper credentials to receive contracts out of the city and any other, you know, a county entity, a state entity, or what have you, a private entity on a larger scale, is, again, that's the model cooperative. Individually, a lot of those young men and women, you know, they hit and miss, they do a little work here, miss a little work there, but on a collective scale, in that framework, one of the things that the previous administration, late Mayor Lumumba, some of the ideas was to put together, we're going to put pressure on this administration through the People's Assembly to keep this model, is for the city to develop an office that will help increase the capacity of those kinds of groups, showing them how to gain permits and licensing and that whole piece. And also, there's going to be about $1 billion coming through Jackson. Through once-in sales tax, the leveraging of that. That's going to happen. This is, matter of fact, that's what this, in the opposition in the election, that's what it was all about. They were all racing to try to control that money.
Is it likely that they're going to appoint an emergency manager, some corporate figure to manage that?
They don't have to do that right now because they control the levels of power with this present administration. They don't have to do that. Now, we were always mindful of that with us because of what our politics are as we moved into the electoral arena. Everybody knows who we are.
Yeah.
Nobody has no illusions about who we are and what our politics are. So we were always mindful of that possibility. A early point to that was the once in sales tax initiative came about 6 years ago. There was a black senator who put forth, he was actually a mayoral candidate in this last year, his name is John Horn. He put it forth and it had this commission attached to it. The commission is the state of Mississippi's way of saying that, okay, we'll let you black folks act yourself, but y'all ain't smart enough to manage this money, so we're going to put a commission over it. The governor had an appointee. The lieutenant governor has an appointee. Speaker of the House has an appointee. Jackson Chamber, Metro Chamber of Commerce has four.
Whoa.
And the city of Jackson mayor has three. Yeah, sit up in your seat. I know how to get your attention. So, to your point, that was a step towards what you're talking about to ensure. Now, we're going to make sure that's to be the case before we move in to deal with, you know, a full-blown takeover. And in our view, that was, you know, just a, okay, just to remind you all who really runs this stuff. And we had no illusions about this. We understand who we are. We understand what the structure is and what it's about. What the late mayor was able to do, because we had internal struggles around that commission and the whole piece, was that he was astute enough to maneuver to get the three of the chamber appointees under his control. Unfortunately, he appointed three, but he made his transition before he was able to appoint the mayoral three.
Talk a moment about the kinds of cooperatives and the initiatives that Cooperation Jackson is about to be doing.
I think
and what this means to people in other cities too, because please know that other folks' eyes are on you here.
One type of cooperative is like a laundry type of cooperative. We have in Jackson a medical corridor which has several different hospitals all around the city of Jackson. What a laundry kind of cooperative would do is they would actually service those hospitals, that anchor institutions, from the needs of washing their linen, things of that nature, getting those kind of contracts to, number one, build skill sets for those, whether it's in the idea of cleaning business or in the ideas of just servicing. The second kind of cooperative would be, I think we talked about a little bit earlier, was like maybe a bread or a bakery type of cooperative. That's something that, definitely a skills bank type of cooperative, where you're actually building capacity for those craftsmen, men and women, who may not necessarily know how to use their talents to the best of their abilities. And you're able to, at the same time, go after those procurement, those small contracts where you're not necessarily bidded out, but the only thing you need is three quotes. So that's one of another type of cooperative we can look at. And another one is also looking at the long-term level, maybe a solar type of cooperative. That's a long-term, it's more scaled.
Solar. Solar what?
A solar cooperative, where you're actually building skill sets when you're winterizing your community, because we have a lot of older houses here, and they're losing a lot of energy. So the way to actually fix that is to actually winterize those. There's funds are available for that. But also you are
so retrofitting homes.
Retrofitting homes in a way that actually saves the community money, also builds up capacity, builds up skill set levels, and actually sustainable, because solar is sustainable. We're not going to run out of sun at any time soon that I know of. And I think those are some of the ones that we're looking at right now. There may be some other ones that will develop, you know, long term, but I think that's a conversation that's going to happen at the People's Assembly, where we actually find out what do those look like, what can we do tangibly, and which one should we start first, because at the same time, we have these great ideas, we really have to let the people decide on which should come first. I mean, I may think that maybe we should start a solar one, but we may have a need for a daycare type of cooperative where you bring the community together to actually educate our young people in a way that they're actually better, because I think our school systems have some problems. So those are some conversations we have. We're going to have those within the People's Assemblies type of framework. So I can't say which one will be the first one, but what I will say is that the people will decide on that.
I think one that we threw out the other night on our radio show, Voices from the Grassroots, was an entertainment co-op where we allow people...
An artist's cooperative. Yes, of some kind.
Right. Now, a little bit farther than that, say if we allow each person to buy into this co-op with $5 a month membership, well, if we took 10,000 people in Jackson that would buy into this membership, over 3 months we could come to the city with a private-public partnership and create enough interest, I think, to start a movie theater or two movie theaters here.
that will be publicly and privately owned. I think the young people, because right now we don't have a movie theater in Jackson. As what, 1980s, we had 11.
Yeah.
And now the city of Jackson supports the suburbs.
Yeah. The idea is that there's a lot of work that needs to be done within the city of Jackson, within Mississippi as a whole. And so what we're asking is that people get involved. What has changed look like? It looks like rolling up your sleeves and putting in your hours of work to make something happen. I think we have an opportunity here in Jackson and in Mississippi as a whole to really do some things that are innovative, that's not necessarily new, but something that's new to some of us because we haven't seen it done in a long time, these cooperatives, in a way that, you know, can actually raise the standard of living for the state as well as the city. And I think that's something that the takeaways would be, this will be, a signature kind of model for those who are looking to create an economy where they don't have to worry about this after a tax and criminal financing run out, after some sort of legislation runs out, the corporation leaves. This is something that's sustainable, it's built to last for a long time, for years and years, and something that you also pass on to your offspring as well. I think that's something that you're looking at. You're looking at a model that's built to last.
Many saw the Jackson Rising Conference as an historic event in the black political saga. Gus Newport is the former mayor of Berkeley, California.
I'm here because I'm glad to see so many young people participating in much of the movement needs that we have. I come from the civil rights movement. I was invited to speak on community land trust. I directed the best-known community land trust in the country, Dudley Street Neighborhood Initiative, where the community won eminent domain authority, the only time in the history of the country a nonprofit has. And I've directed a variety of land trusts. I was the mayor of Berkeley, California from 78 to 86, and I've taught at several universities. I was traveling with Malcolm X 4 days before he was assassinated. We were very close friends, and so for a variety of reasons, young people invite me to some of these conferences and things, and I'm pleased, even though the media doesn't show us that there's a movement in this country, there is a movement on the ground all over this country.
So what are you seeing here at Jackson Rising?
I see people talking about the kinds of pursuits of, from an economic reality that we have to deal with, co-ops and land trust and organizing and all the things that makes us come together as a people to, one, change the types of approaches that this country takes, capitalism, etc., and whatever else, and begin to look at all people from an objective standpoint, where humans wanting to come together to develop a society and an economy that will benefit and feed all and educate all, both domestically and internationally.
What do things like the cooperative model have to teach us that we don't learn otherwise?
The cooperative model teaches how to create a community, what Martin Luther King used to refer to as the beloved community, how to work together side by side to make sure that those who are least capable amongst us take care of themselves, the elderly as well as the real young, to get a sound education, to learn to eat correctly, to learn to have concern for your fellow human being irregardless of race, class, etc., whatever else.
Black Agenda Report's Bruce Dixon caught up with Rose Brewer from Minneapolis, an activist with the U.S. Social Forum and the Black Left Unity Network.
I think it is a foundational moment. Jackson, with its history, and the fact that in the wake of tremendous obstacles, we're talking about alternatives to the current economy. And I think this is an amazing, amazing space for people to vision as well as potentially build something that is very new.
As black Americans, you and I, we get fed a steady diet of success stories that are always individual success stories and celebrity success stories and wealth pornography and all this good stuff. What do cooperatives and that kind of motion have to teach us about collective success versus individual success and the possibilities of what?
You know, I think there's a tremendous lesson here. And, you know, if we really were aware of our history, this goes deep in the history of Africa, America. We've forgotten that the very survival of black people in this country depended on that kind of communal collective effort. And throughout our history, that has been central and uppermost, of course, under individualistic capitalism that's been dissipated. And the ideology of individual success has been highly detrimental. So to bring that history back into our lenses, as well as to cultivate in a value sense that I am because we are, is such a powerful message. To reignite that communal as well as cooperative spirit is absolutely essential to any kind of social transformation we expect to have.
And finally, Bruce Dixon encountered Sage Crump from New Orleans, who works with Artists for Change. He asked Crump how she wound up in Jackson, Mississippi.
Because the importance of economic independence for the implication of freedom for communities. Our ability to both sustain our communities' infrastructure involves how we work together, and that's part of the cooperative model, but it's also about how do we recreate the structures and the systems that continue to oppress people both locally and internationally. So the conversation here in Jackson was about cooperatives, but what moved me most was this idea of the solidarity economy and how do we shift the way we think about our exchange of goods and services from an individual model of give and get to a larger what is the benefit for all people, and putting at the center the primacy of social welfare and creating the world that we want to see as the impetus for our economic vision.
And that's it for this edition of Black Agenda Radio. Be sure to visit us at blackagendareport.com, where you'll find a new and provocative issue each Wednesday. That's www.blackagendareport.com. And while you're there, check out the latest episode of Black Agenda Television. It's the place for news, commentary, and analysis from the Black Left. I'm Glenn Ford. Our thanks to the good people at the Progressive Radio Network.
This is Black Agenda Radio, information for liberation.